Good morning. It's 11:06 on WSIC News Radio, and you're listening to We're Just Saying with Senator Vicky Sawyer and David. I'd like to be part of our show, 844-STUDIO-4. We are also streaming live on the WSIC News website, YouTube, Facebook, X, LinkedIn, all points in between. Senator Sawyer, good morning.
Good morning. And you know what? Total pass on the few flub-ups there.
Well, you know, normally I'm just like, I'm a machine, but, you know, today I'm just flubbing up a little bit. I think it's because, you know, I'm sort of zeroing in and focused on this time of year, which is the most glorious time of the year for a college basketball fan and potential sports bettor. Not that I've ever done that, March Madness time. Have you watched any games?
I have not watched that many games, and I don't know. I feel like I'm just busy and I haven't been able to get into it, but I have been following that. Raleigh's own NC State was ACC champs and won five games in 5 days, and now is on the road. And last night in a very late game,
victorious.
Yeah,
and
they so smashed again.
They did. I mean, they're on a roll. Could be 1983.
It is so sweet to see all of these NC State fans like actually be happy because
I know.
For years, it's just like they're so miserable and they hate everybody, especially Carolina.
As a Charlotte 49er fan, one day I hope to be happy again on March Madness, too. I told a friend of mine, I was like, you know, one day I hope that this glorious time of year, I'm not depressed because once again, the Charlotte 49ers were not making the tournament.
Wait a minute, 1974? So, we made it to the final
77, we made it to the final four. And we were in the tournaments a number of times, you know, when I was in school and just after school. We just haven't been in like 20 years.
That's a 20-year drought.
Rough. It's kind of rough. But I am a NC State fan right now. I am pulling for them.
You are.
Completely. I went to the games yesterday down in Charlotte. Got to see Carolina play.
Good.
And so, I mean, not really. But, you know, it was watching Carolina play. You know, they were playing nobody.
A fun experience.
I've noticed, even when Carolina is playing, you know, nobody of any consequence, a number 16 seed, the refs are still completely in the tank for them. It does not matter who they're playing or what's going on. The fix is in because all refs put the fix in for Carolina. That's the way it is. And you'll never convince me it's not the same.
You sound like an NC State fan.
Well, you know, we have a lot in common with NC State fans. I like NC State fans. But obviously, with March Madness kicking off, obviously, you know, sports betting.
Did you hear that you can legally bet in North Carolina on sports?
I heard a rumor about that you could legally bet on sports.
Yeah.
And what was so funny is I was looking around while I was at the arena.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of times you'll see people on their phones, like, texting or playing something like that. I just as out of sheer curiosity was looking around, and there were more people on betting apps and things like that. As I was looking around in the arena, making them out and stuff like that, people placing their wagers and things like that. So, and you know, my anecdotal evidence is sports betting is a hit.
It's strong.
And the force is strong with sports betting right now in March Madness.
Well, WRAL did a poll. Now remember, that's the local news organization in the Raleigh area. And some conservatives usually beat up on them, so this is tongue-in-cheek. But WRAL did a poll about sports betting. And what they found out is people like you bet on sports.
People like me?
Mean male.
Why don't you just say you people? I mean, just throw it out there. Wow. Man.
They found out that males who are of a certain age.
A certain age?
Tend to vote on sports. But females of all ages tend to not
bet on sports.
Not that much, no.
Well, I will say that I did not see, as I was doing my cursory review of iPhones shining in the arena yesterday, I did not see,
I don't think I saw
a lot of females looking like they were making any sports.
Interesting
bets.
Question to that rabbit hole. Follow me down. When I'm usually at a sporting event, which is, you know, always so often, I have difficulty accessing the internet because the number of users accessing the phone. Was there any interruption in the internet so that people could get their bets placed?
So funny you say that.
Yeah.
So I had at the Spectrum Center, they have Spectrum Wi-Fi.
Okay.
And I have Spectrum Mobile, so I automatically get free on there. And it ran very, very slow. For me and everything like that. And then I had to, and so basically I had to, at one point took it off the Wi-Fi and my signal was not very good. It bounced back and forth through LTE and 5GW. But yes, it seemed like that with all that concentration, because I have the same issue at Panthers games.
Right.
If I'm on my phone, a lag, a very slow and everything like that. So did experience some of that yesterday.
Yeah. So I was wondering that, I guess sporting arenas in order to meet that demand are going to have to really bump up their
The Wi-Fi.
Yeah, I guess so.
Well, not for nothing, the Spectrum Center really should have fantastic Wi-Fi. not for nothing. That should be the best Wi-Fi in the city, given that it is the Spectrum Center. Yeah. Just throwing that out there.
Well, in this poll, they said that they interviewed 850 North Carolinian adults. I'm glad it was adults. And said that 53% will never bet on sports. 53.
Liars.
You think so?
Lies.
18 saying that they plan to bet, but just rarely. And 7% of adults said they would bet frequently. And 22% say and they plan to be betting occasionally.
See, those numbers are low.
Really?
I feel like those numbers are low.
You do?
I do. Because I really feel like that some of that 53% that say they'll never bet on sports are virtue signaling just a little bit.
Well, I wonder how many of them filled out an office bracket.
Exactly. Or have done fantasy football or have, you know, hey, $20 says this.
I was at an event last night and I was doing raffles left and right trying to win, you know, different things. And so I was like, and a lot of those people, they are traditionally very conservative. And I'm thinking, we're all betting here.
Isn't that funny? Like the reverse raffles that we do for fundraisers, the gun raffles that we do based off of the lottery.
Yeah.
We'll buy tickets for those.
But that's not gambling.
But that's not gambling. Scratch off, that's not gambling. Placing a bet on a sporting event, no, that's gambling.
Yeah.
That's the devil's thing right there. Can't do that. Oh. And they virtue signal and yell about it while they're scratching off their lucky lotto.
You know, this is going back to my youth, and I've told the listening audience that my grandparents raised me, and they were very, very old, and I was very, very young. So their date of birth was 18 and 19. So when we used to play cards, Nanny and I, which was gin rummy, she would close the curtains because playing cards was considered the devil's play.
Wow.
Yes. Yeah, so we would play gin rummy in the sitting room, and we would close the curtains, and that was our afternoon fun.
No,
see playing with the devil.
See, I love playing cards with my grandparents and my older aunts. And they played Canasta.
Really?
Yes, they played Canasta.
That's highfalutin.
I mean, like multiple decks and everything like that. But it was always so fun to watch them because they'd get my grandmother in particular would get really upset with my grandfather and my great uncle because they had signals.
They were cheating and playing the devil's game.
Ooh, cheated like shame, nobody's business. Shame.
Now after the break, we are going to have someone who's coming onto the show named Donald Bryson from the John Locke Foundation. And we're going to talk about some people who are maybe cheating or playing fast and loose with the facts about opportunity scholarships.
Oh, yes.
Yes, yes. We had our very own Governor Cooper that came, and I was grateful that he came and spoke to the Statesville Chamber of Commerce. Regardless of if you are a D, it's always nice to have a governor come in and address your local chamber. But during that time, he spent a lot of times, let's just say, saying some things that may be not true about the Opportunity Scholarship. So I reached out to Donald Bryson, and we're going to kind of go through and talk about those rumors that are out there and then come up with the facts as to why they are rumors.
Outstanding. We're all about the truth here. You're listening to We're Just Saying on WSIC News. We'll be right back. Hanging on WSIC News Radio with Senator Vicki Sawyer and David. We are streaming live on the WSIC News website, social media, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, and X and LinkedIn. And Senator Sawyer, you want to run through and introduce our guest?
Yeah, I'm excited to have on the show today Donald Bryson. So that for those of you who scroll the NC poll world and on the X, you will see a lot of him tweeting because he is the CEO of John Locke Foundation and publisher of Carolina Journal. Now, John Locke is an independent nonprofit think tank. It does have a vision of North Carolina in which liberty and limited constitutional government are the cornerstones of society so that individuals, families, and institutions can freely shape their own destinies. I just wanted to share that with you because I thought it was very well said. I do welcome to the show Donald Bryson. And today we talk about... I obviously was not ready for the clapping, but Donald, thank you so much for calling into the show.
Well, thank you so much for having me on. You know, it's a good day. My birthday was yesterday.
Oh.
In that honor, that the nation has thrown me a basketball tournament, and so it's hard to not be happy.
Yeah, that's very great. So you could have joined us with the sports betting conversation earlier, but today I wanted... I reached out to you yesterday or the day before, I can't recall now, because you had reposted or posted a Carolina Journal article, and it really was a great way to dispel some of these rumors or myths about an opportunity scholarship that has been and really heavily trying to heavily be used in North Carolina right now. So for the listening audience, just give a quick definition of what is opportunity scholarship and what that is in North Carolina.
Sure. So back in 2013, that was Governor Pat McCrory's first year in office. The General Assembly and Governor McCrory signed a bill in place that created a school voucher program. This has been debated for decades all across America, but it's the idea that, this program, this money is set aside so that some families, at that point it was just low-income families, would be able to receive some scholarship money from the North Carolina State Education Assistance Authority to pay for tuition fees at private K-12 private schools across North Carolina. And so since that time, it went in place in the 2014-15 school year. And we had, I think, just over 1,200 applicants or recipients in that year. To this past year, we had more than 25,000 recipients. Wow. And so over 8 school years, this program has grown by 2,000%.
Wow. Wow. So great synopsis of the history. I did not realize it had gone back that far. But there's been opponents to this program for a long time. And one of the main myths out there is that these scholarships will take money away from traditional public education. Explain how that's not accurate.
Well, money is fungible, Senator. And again, thank y'all for having me on today. But yeah. I mean, you know, as someone who has worked with the state budget, money is fungible. You can move things around in a variety of different ways. But that being said, for the state of North Carolina, it all comes out of the pot of the general fund. When we pay our sales tax or the property tax on our car or on our income tax, it all goes into the general fund pot of money. And so on the one hand, they can say, opportunity scholarships take away from public school spending. But if that's true, that also means that every time we buy a new cruiser for the state highway patrol, that's taking away from public school spending, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or anytime the transportation department needs a new bulldozer, well, that's taking away from public school spending.
Mm-hmm.
But if you think about the opportunity scholarship program holistically as part of public or as part of education spending in North Carolina, it makes up less than 1%. Of the overall budget that we put towards K-12 education. And so it's not even a realistic thing to think about in terms of how much money we pour into our public schools, which, by the way, have done a lot of good, but it's just difficult to have a centralized education program that serves every child from Murphy to Manio adequately.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And this just gives an opportunity for parents to choose the school, whether that be public or private or charter. So another one of those myths that that article highlighted and that you kind of went through about it is, Cooper is saying that all these public schools are underfunded, but the article actually mentioned that there had been an increase in funding so that there's not this thing that now that we have opportunity scholarships for all income levels with a cap, right? There's not unlimited money there. But we also have been increasing the spending in K-12 education, correct?
That's right. We sure have. The General Assembly has increased K-12 spending year over year in perpetuity into eternity past, but has forever. And at the same time, the federal government has increased their part of spending on public education. And so, saying that, public education spending just isn't enough and that sort of thing, it's nonsense on a few levels, and I'll name a few. First off, we've continued to increase education spending, like I said, for the past few decades. If you look back at just the past 35 years, it has gone up astronomically. But when we look at the national assessment that you know our kids take. North Carolina scores and actually scores nationally have flatlined at the same time that we've increased education spending.
Mm-hmm.
And so if the idea is if we spend more, student achievement will increase, that's just not shown to be the case. There's not a correlation there over the past 35 to 40 years.
Right.
The other part of that is, I just get so stuck on the point that, student performance tends to just not be part of the conversation. And that's what really disturbs me more. The conversation quickly devolves into how much are we paying the adults we're not talking about the purpose of the education program. But the other part of the argument that the article makes, and I'm sorry, is that public schools in North Carolina receive billions of dollars in COVID funding, which they're still largely just sitting on.
Mm-hmm.
So if they need to spend that money in order to provide a better education for our kids, then spend it. The money's there. The federal government's already allocated. It's literally in your bank account.
Well, we do have one of the highest per pupil expenditures in the Charlotte-Mecklenburg school system, and yet we have some of the lowest student outcomes in North Carolina. So when you were talking about, is there really a direct correlation between the percentage of or amount of money that's spent per pupil and student outcomes? It's not necessarily been proven by the data. And these families who live in those districts who have not been performing well do need an opportunity for their child to get the type of education that they need. And this is just another tool in the toolbox for parents and their choice. But I think pulling it all back out of to a higher level, I always think about it this way. I don't see the same folks who are complaining about pre-K vouchers that go to private schools or the Pell Grant, which is state money or federal money that goes to private colleges. It just seems disingenuous to me that it's, for some reason, it's okay for pre-K and it's okay for college, but it's not okay for K-12. That's always what blows my mind.
Familiar with Smart Start?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. Smart Start, which was started, I think under Governor Mike Easley.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pre-K voucher program. It is public money going to private pre-K programs that sometimes have religious instruction. Oh, gasp. Oh, no. But you know what? They help kids get ahead in terms of, reading and writing and that sort of thing.
Right.
And then for years, the federal government has the Pell Grant, which has gone to private colleges forever, which, by the way, can include religious instruction. But then North Carolina itself has had the Education Assistance Grant. The North Carolina Association of, Private Colleges and Universities or something like that. They've got an office there on Jones Street. The number one thing in their legislative agenda is to keep that education assistance scholarship in the state budget every year.
Right.
And it goes to schools like Duke and Wake Forest and North Carolina Wesleyan.
Mm-hmm.
It's something about, from folks on the left, K-12 just seems to be this, sacred cow that I can't quite figure out why that type of education is different than something that comes before it or after.
Absolutely. And one of the other things that I hear a lot from my public ed folks is that this is public money going to a private school, and those private schools are not held accountable for student outcomes. That's simply just not the case.
No, it's not the case. And the word accountability gets thrown around a lot. Accountability means that we have knowledge of something and then we're able to do something about it. But the argument they make is that, we just don't know enough about the private schools. Well, parents know, for one thing, that parents who are active enough to choose a school for their child are going to know whether their child is learning or not. Second, state law already requires private schools to administer a nationally normed test every year. And then if the state wants to come and examine what those test scores are, they come in and can look at the school's test scores. So if Governor Cooper wants to know what the test scores are at, Charlotte Country Day, he can go and look at it anytime he wants to. Mm-hmm. He just doesn't do it. But on top of that, I'm not trying to belittle public schools necessarily, but, let's talk about that word accountability. It was not too long ago that there was a guidance counselor in Wilkes County schools who got in trouble. I believe it was Wilkes County who got in trouble because that school counselor had been dealing drugs in the community.
Okay.
Now, I'm not saying that he was dealing with students, but if parents were uncomfortable with sending their kids to that high school, mm-hmm. do they have an option to go to another high school? No, they don't. Mm-hmm. So how accountable is that school really for the actions of its employees?
Yeah.
Not really that accountable.
Yeah. Yeah. No, all good points. Donald, we are running out of time here, but I do appreciate you being on the show and making those points about the Opportunity Scholarship. I've mentioned to our radio listening audience before, I was not a big fan at first, but the more I know and the more I understand, the more I love this program. I'm glad that we've expanded it to all families. So Donald Bryson, President, CEO of John Locke Foundation, thank you so much for joining us today on We're Just Saying.
Thank you all so much for having me on, and we'll talk to you soon.
Yes, sir.
Thanks a lot. We'll be right back. You're listening to We're Just Saying on WSIC News Radio with Senator Vicki Sawyer. Back to We're Just Saying on WSIC News Radio with Senator Vicki Sawyer and David. If you'd like to be part of the show, 844-STUDIO-4. We are still streaming live on the WSIC News website. I almost made it.
It's okay.
YouTube, Facebook, Twitter,
and
X, LinkedIn.
I really do give you grace today because, you know, we haven't been together for a few weeks on the radio.
That's true.
Last week, I had so many people emailing in how awesome I did without you.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and I know that you kind of caught wind of that and understand.
You know, actually, I received so many emails as well about how you did without me. I'm not sure that they were the same message, but I received a lot as well, too.
Yeah.
So that's your story, and you're sticking to it.
That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. So I'm going to give you grace, because you know, your ego's taken a bruising.
It has. You know? It has, and I'm like, I'm probably pressing. I'm trying too hard.
Yeah.
Really trying
just
to get
relax.
Back in there. I just need to go with the flow.
Yeah, I know, because, you know, we are radio professional.
See, I've stopped saying that. I took on enough criticism for saying that too often. And you just make it a point to throw it in.
I do, because I know it annoys one person.
One person in particular out there.
I tried to say that.
One person in particular.
You know who else is annoyed?
Who?
Some environmentalists.
You call it annoyed. I call it Friday when we're talking about annoyed environmentalists. What are they annoyed about now?
Oh, their favorite nemesis, Duke Energy.
The devil, Duke Energy.
The devil. Man, this is a devil show coming up.
Exactly.
I guess in Easter, you know, in the area of Lent, we're talking a little bit.
Trying to approach some redemption here. But why are they mad at Duke now?
Well, for what other reason? Yeah. So in our area, and the reason I'm bringing this up is Marshall Steam Station is a coal-fired plant that produces and has produced energy for our area for, gosh, 50 or plus years or so. Forgive me for not remember exactly when that plant opened. Duke Energy is going to a carbon neutral footprint, I think, in 2050. And part of that carbon neutrality is that they need to and have applied to convert two of their coal-fired plants to natural gas, Marshall Steam Station being one of them. So for people in our area, gosh, I remember my little girl, Sydney, who's now 21, I used to drop her off at her Mimi's house to be watched, who lived right across from Marshall Steam Station, as far as on the water there. And she would have the windows open, and she would like just be like dusting all the time, because there would be like coal that came. This is before they had the scrubbers and stuff put in. So we've lived with this thing, this energy production plant, for a long time. And so for those of us who've seen the evolution of that, have where they got this scrubber in, where like it's amazing. And so you don't have that type of coal ash anywhere near you anymore. And now to be converted to natural gas, I think it's a really great way to move forward. But environmentalists, my understanding, are very upset because, for somehow they just want us to be able to drive electric vehicles, but the energy just comes from
that's secondary.
Well, outer space or something.
Hey, so here's my problem. Yeah. Is that there's a lot of push on wind and solar. I get it. Neither is commercially and broadly viable
right
to generate the kind of energy necessary. environmentalists a lot of times will say, well, it's because you haven't invested enough in it. Well, the only reason it is even economically viable for anyone to do anything with it is through government subsidies. Mm. So we're making investments to the tunes of hundreds of millions and in some cases in the billions of dollars into these energies that, quite frankly, have been researched and like that for the last 30 years and have yet to produce commercially viable products for energy. You know what? You know what does?
What?
Natural gas.
Oh, you're a drill baby drill.
Drill baby drill.
Okay.
You know what? If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Okay. Natural gas will produce the energy that you need.
Yeah.
It is much lower cost to produce. It doesn't need to be subsidized.
Yeah.
And it actually generates energy.
Oh.
Imagine that. and look, I don't mind coal. I mean, to be fair with you, technology has gotten much better at ensuring that, you know, coal particles and things like that are taken care of, like the scrubbers they do at Marshall Steam. It is a proven, viable way to generate energy.
And coal ash can be actually reused for recycled in, some sort of construction. And also, it's escaping me now, there's a mineral that they can take out of it and reuse and resell. But anyways, so the byproduct of coal has gotten much, much cleaner than it ever has before.
And they've got new uses for it and things like that.
Right.
So it's like one of the things when people, but natural gas does take you to a further towards carbon neutral.
Right.
Is that not the goal? Is that not what we want? Do we not want to save Mother Earth, environmentalists out there? Do we not want her happy with us? You know, because you all have said we've destroyed her over the past 120 years just because, you know, forget the thousands and thousands and millions before that. It's just been in 120 years that when we've had coal and oil that things got bad, right? But now, or 200 years, but now, but it's like this takes you there.
Right.
Why are you complaining about it?
Yeah.
Why? Because you got to drill.
Yeah.
You got, look, there's trade-offs, folks. You can either have clean air and drill natural gas, or you can keep throwing solar and things that don't work out there and just feel good about yourself, which, to be fair, that's what it's about. It's why John Kerry takes private jets everywhere he goes to talk and chastise people about their carbon footprint, right? Saying this crap is more about feeling good about yourself than actually practical solutions for a lot of these people, and I will not apologize for saying it.
Okay. I absolutely
sorry, I went Larry Shaheen on you right there.
I was just thinking you went a little Larry Shaheen. I like it.
Well, there's pressure here. I gotta dial things up here.
I know.
Since you did so much better without me.
I'm just kidding. Yeah, it is kind of disingenuous, though, to... I will take the same stance, but a nuanced a little approach. I do enjoy looking and spending money into finding other means of manufacturing of electricity, understanding that renewables are a area that can be done, but it needs to be all hands on deck approach, right? Mm-hmm. I don't think one type of energy production is the answer. We need multiple types of energy production. And that includes nuclear as well as coal and natural gas and renewable energies. I think the demand of what we're putting on the grid and the output, especially with, think about like EVs.
Mm-hmm.
So how is it going to produce all of the electricity that's going to be needed for this world utopia of EVs? You know, I mean, like, how's that going to happen?
Well, and that's totally fair because the EVs may generate, quote unquote, less of a carbon footprint, but the energy required to required to charge them,
right?
The only viable ways to do that right now are with the existing natural resources that we have, right? It's not as though you can do an entire solar station, right, that generates enough power to charge every single EV vehicle. It doesn't work that way.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the byproduct of the batteries when the batteries go down and how you dispose of them.
Yeah.
It has to be an all hands on deck approach mixed with the things that work versus the innovation that we want to try to get to and develop. Look, I'm a capitalist. If you can make solar and wind work and make energy cheaper and make it cleaner, bring it on.
Yeah.
Those are all wins. The problem is right now, completely unable to do it.
Yeah.
So you cannot sacrifice the things that do work for those that don't yet.
Right.
Keep developing them. And when they do, I'll be the first to jump on board once they become economically viable and actually do what they're supposed to do. But until then, you got to go with what works.
Yeah. So for me, sometimes EVs, and though I like them and I've actually been in the market to buy one and had one on order, but it's just a farce because you're just trading air pollution for ground pollution. right? With the batteries that they have, when they go on fire, it's crazy. It's actually damaging and hurting some infrastructure as well as lives when firefighters are trying to go in there. And they run through, the life of their tires run through is like half life of a regular tire. So, you know, what are you going to do with those tires? But I will say something is cool.
What's that?
There is a technology out there that can be laid into pavement that can help EVs charge as they drive.
Really?
Yes. I actually.
Witchcraft. I don't believe you. Witchcraft.
Witchcraft.
I don't believe you. Really? So they lay it into the pavement and helps them charge?
Yeah.
Like kinetic?
Yeah.
Or something? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's a couple miles of interstate that the state of Georgia has lane, and it's on, like, outside of Atlanta somewhere towards the Alabama border. And they do these type of different innovative ideas about how they can do it. But yeah, so the idea is as you drive your car down the road, there would be charging cells in the pavement that will help recharge your car.
Interesting.
Magic.
Witchcraft. Witchcraft. Though I have to wonder, so, and I know, I remember in the article that you had sent earlier and talked about, hydrogen was a mix inside of that. And a lot of people may not realize that Mooresville actually has a hydrogen, the Mooresville South Irondale Chamber has like a hydrogen hydrail initiative.
Yes,
that we've actually sort of been at the forefront of this for a while, thanks to Bill Thunberg and a gentleman by the name of Stan Thompson.
That's right.
Who have been talking hydrail for a while. And hydrogen as a fuel source has been implemented overseas in a number of different countries, specifically in the use of rail. And so, and I can still remember when I was on the Mooresville Town Board, Stan would come probably once every other month or something like that, or there'd be an op-ed in the paper about hydrail, because Stan, big believer in this, went overseas, worked with a number of different governments on implementation of theirs. Mm-hmm. So have huge passion for it. And he would come and he would speak during public comment and talk about hydrail and present on hydrail. But that actually, in itself, my big problem with hydrogen was, I love, if we can get it where it's supposed to be and obviously it's proven, right? But I still struggle with that whole H-bomb thing.
Yeah.
And so that was always my big change. Now I get safety and everything like that, but I was always kind of, what happens if the train derails?
Oh yeah.
What happens if it goes off? Because hydrogen is flammable.
Flammable.
And so
that's some data and science right there.
Exactly.
I know.
It is or inflammable, which means the same thing.
Uh-huh. Does it?
That's what they say. Inflammable and flammable mean the same thing.
Oh.
It's science. That's what people always told me. It's like, in the same thing, irregardless is not a word.
Right. Right?
But how many people use it, right?
I mean, you just did.
Well, I did, but I used it to describe itself.
Okay. All right.
I didn't use it like saying, I didn't use it in context and then say, I just used a word that not, I was saying it is not a real word.
Okay.
But people use it all the time.
Okay.
You've never used irregardless?
I can't say that I haven't.
You will now. It's on your brain now.
Now, amaze. This is all I mean. Well, irregardless of what you just said.
Oh, well played.
Uh-huh.
Well played. It's not a word.
Yeah. Well, we can talk after the break about folks who went online to renew their driver's license, and irregardless of that action,
They didn't work. See,
and
that hurts my heart, because the online renewal of my driver's license, my registration, is like the one good thing I have to say about the DMV.
Oh, well, I might just have to take it away from you here, buddy.
Of course you would. Yep. Kill my joy. You're listening to We're Just Saying on WSIC News Radio. We'll be right back. Welcome back to We're Just Saying on WSIC News Radio with Senator Vicki Sawyer and David. If you'd like to be part of our show, 844-STUDIO-4 are still streaming live on the WSIC News website, YouTube, Facebook, X, and LinkedIn.
I'm excited for this last segment.
I am too.
Because where else in radio can you listen to racing, DMV glitches, and marijuana all in the same segment?
Well, we're on the cutting edge of radio.
Yeah,
here,
so. We're gonna bring it.
So, what do all those things have in common? Well, so starting out, so you did mention the DMV going into the break.
Yeah, I know. I was so excited. You know, we had this oversight committee meeting, and we got to ask some really pertinent questions as to why it's taking so long for them to modernize. And I thought at first it was $90 million, but then when the research team came back, it actually was $150 million we'd given to them over the last 10 years to modernize their DMV. And yet they're still using the language computer language of my grandpa. So it's like, come on, guys. They had just rolled out these kiosks, which was they're touting as a something that's really cool. But I guess the only difference between that kiosk and this computer sitting in front of me is that that kiosk is in a kiosk format. It's literally the same accessibility that you can get on your computer on a DMV kiosk. And
so begs the question, why?
Right. And it was kind of weird too, because, you know, I'm a big Harris Teeter shopper, right? I am. But I also know that there is a certain type of Harris Teeter shopper. They're not the people who don't probably have an iPad, iPhone, and a computer sitting at home, right? I mean, these are very, they usually are shoppers that have access to their own computers.
Yeah.
You would think a kiosk would go into a chain where maybe that wasn't or served a population of people who didn't have ready access to their computer.
Yeah.
Not Harris Teeter.
No, not Harris Teeter. No, and that, and I'm yeah. Like,
okay, come on, guys.
Yeah, thinking ahead. Yeah, that's I probably mean, not the best
wouldn't
place.
Wouldn't you go to like I don't know. I don't want to name a specific.
Well, no, but you would try to centralize it in a location where people who are less likely to have access to their own computer or smartphone or something like that, though in this day and age, a computer maybe not, but a smartphone.
Yeah.
I mean, but there's still people out. I mean, you know, I've got a very nice older gentleman. It's a friend of mine. Got a flip phone.
Sure.
And loves the flip. And you're never going to get on a smartphone. Ever. Sure. So centralizing those in places or at DMV locations, right?
Right.
Where people can go who don't have access could go into those things.
Yeah.
Makes far more sense than putting it somewhere where.
In a bougie Harris Teeter.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, and that's, you know, but that would make too much sense. That would make too much sense.
There's progress. I mean, there's progress. There's government at work there.
But is it really progress?
Well, then, so some of those people who did not go to the kiosk at Harris Teeter, but went online to renew their driver's license, about 2,150 people, there was a computer glitch. So they accepted their payment, they renewed their license, and then about 30 days later, the DMV said, nope, you have to come see us at the DMV.
Oh, wow.
That we did not... There was a glitch. We should not have allowed you to renew your license. And so now check this out.
Why should they not? Like, was it time for a new picture or something?
Yeah, so you can renew your license, I think, one time online, but then you have to go in person, which I kind of believe that you should because there's a lot of changes.
A lot of changes happen.
I hate to admit it, but, you know.
As a fine wine, to be sure. But yes, there's been a few changes.
Yeah,
there's been a few changes. Yes. As have I.
So those are the type of things. So now check this out. They get these emails that here's your money back. You need to go to the DMV to get your license renewed. And there's no stinking appointments available and their license are expired.
See, it's like there's no, this is the very definition of the no win scenario.
Yeah, I know.
There is no winning here. Well, hopefully, obviously, with your oversight, hopefully these things are going to be fixed, right?
No, I mean, I'm trying.
You're
man.
Not taking that on?
I'm trying. It's not a function of the General Assembly. I mean, you know, the DMV is led by an appointee and answers to the governor of North Carolina. And this isn't a, you know, Governor Cooper or Governor whatever slam. I think there's a culture over there that has not been able to perform, especially when it comes to the interwebs. I think that's a new concept for them over there.
The interwebs,
yeah,
yes. Using the Google machine on the interwebs.
God bless them. I hope they can get it together because it is so frustrating. And again, that is the front door to North Carolina government. It's the one agency that everybody will access. And I just feel like we slammed the door shut in everybody's face. It's just, we've got to do better. They have got to do better. Just got to. All right. So there's our glitches.
So what's next? We got NASCAR, right?
Yeah. Okay. So this is maybe like going way back for me, but my high school used to play football at a Bowman Gray Stadium.
Okay.
So those of you who are Piedmonters may know what Bowman Gray Stadium is, but it is a short track that runs on asphalt. I think it's a quarter mile, and they run late modifieds and like three or four different classes of cars, and it is a good time. If you want to go to a race that makes me actually, I enjoy it. So it's like a Friday night race and you go and you see what racing was mm-hmm. right before it got all hyper glammed and everything. You would go to Bowman Gray. Now, I mean, it is culture. I mean, I have been there with chicken bones have been thrown at the drivers as they go by.
Well, that's part of the ambiance. It's the atmosphere. It's what you go for.
Yes. So
it's the same reason you go to Thirsty Thursday at a minor league ball game.
Yes,
there's a certain type of entertainment you're just expecting to see.
Yeah. So kids out there, go to Bowman Gray Stadium. It's just like living history at its finest. And it is so great. You know, there used to be a reality show for that stadium.
Really?
I watched it religiously. It was so good because the fights, I mean, it's kind of like a WWE match there.
Yeah.
I mean, there will be a fight.
Yes.
At the end of the day. And I will be cheering to see which one is going to win.
But like I said, again, that's part of the entertainment. But so NASCAR is now taking this
Yeah.
over.
So this has been a family enterprise for a long time. And now NASCAR is, since it is a NASCAR sanctioned event, NASCAR is going to come in and take over the running of that. So I think that will help give it more probably national footprint and maybe make it, but I hope it doesn't lose its local flair because I do love me some Bowman Gray.
See, now I'm skeptical. No offense to NASCAR by any stretch, but when a big conglomerate, you know, corporate entity comes in like that. When the man comes in and takes it over, I don't know how, don't know how it keeps the...
The flair?
The flair. Because they're going to put in rules. Like, you know, don't get out of your car.
Rules.
We don't know rules. But like, you can't fight. Then why come?
Yeah.
It's like, just have them sign a waiver.
Yeah.
There's ways to get around that.
Yeah.
Waiver and consent that if somebody throws a punch, you'll throw it back.
There's these great family rivalries at that track. There's like the Myers and the Millers, and there's a few others that have been racing. Their dads were racers and they're racing. And all week long, they work on their car in the back of the shop and then they come out. It's on Saturday night because Friday night was football. They come out and they, qualify all day and they're all hot. Yeah. And then at the night,
and
they don't like each other. They want to fight. It's so good. It is such good entertainment.
But there's crossover potential here,
what?
Right? So a Bachelor, but for the Bowman Gray. And then it could be if the rivalry families intermarry or something like that. Romeo and Juliet style, War of the Roses type thing, man. There's so much crossover potential here, entertainment value, but it's got to keep that core. Got to keep that core. People that hate each other and want to fight.
Yeah,
that's key.
It is.
That's what made NASCAR great.
It is what made NASCAR.
Get back to your roots, NASCAR.
Yeah. I will say we have a lot of friends in the NASCAR industry, and it's a local business that's done amazing things. But I do kind of miss the day where you could drive what the drivers were driving on the track.
Mm-hmm.
Like it'd be really cool today if I looked at a NASCAR car and it would be like. I don't know, a Lamborghini, well, I guess it would need to be American made. Like, the old school Mustangs that I could go and,
Richard Petty's Plymouth.
Yeah, I would like to be able to see, that's the car that he drove and it's winning a lot. I want to go buy that car.
Yeah.
You can't do that anymore.
No.
I kind of miss the stock car portion of the NASCAR stuff.
Yeah, I can see that. I miss Pontiac.
You do?
I miss Pontiac.
Why do you miss Pontiac?
Because, man, Pontiac was just awesome. My first, second, and third car.
First, second, and third
car. We're all Pikes. I had a mean Pontiac Sunbird, LE, by the way. Quad four engine was a beast.
Quad four engine. So it took you about, 2 minutes to get to 60 miles an hour?
Yes, and I wanted to pass somebody, I had to turn the air conditioner off.
Okay.
Because I couldn't get to passing gear if the game was right. It was a mean piece of machinery. Now, I did not have that problem with the Grand Prix that I bought after college. That had no problem getting into passing
gear. Did you have the gold package on the Grand Prix?
No, I had the GT package.
Oh, okay.
I wanted the GTP, the insurance on that was a little more than I could afford.
Yeah.
Of course, to be fair, the insurance and the car payment on the GT were more than I could afford, but I bought them
but
anyway.
But you bought them anyway.
But I got them anyway. I didn't care at the time.
Well, you know what? There's a few congressmen and some maybe state or federal senators that don't want some folks on the Cherokee Nation to buy something they can't afford.
Well, yeah. So obviously Cherokee, we covered this a while back. Cherokee passed marijuana on the tribal lands.
Yes.
But now they're getting pushback from the federal government.
Yeah. So I didn't realize it was coming up this soon, but the Cherokee, they're making plans for the state's first legal cannabis just a month from now. So, but we do have, and actually a friend of mine, I really respect him, Congressman Chuck Edwards, and as well as Tom Tillis and Ted Budd. They all have taken various steps to tamp down this whole initiative. But I think the award goes to Congressman Edwards because he had the kitschiest saying.
Okay, what do you say?
He filed the Stop Pot Act.
Stop Pot Act.
Yeah.
But Spa.
Yeah.
Spa.
Spa.
Stop Pot Act.
So I think he's got the
Well, every good government program has always had an acronym, right?
Well, right. And unfortunately, this one, this acronym is going to be DOA because the bill was transferred to a committee, but it has been just rotting there ever since. So, well, it looks like everything's going
to
happen.
Where most things go to die committee.
Yes, yes, exactly.
Well, thank you for joining us on We're Just Saying. We hope you enjoyed it. We will talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening.
Serving you better than ever before. 105.9 100.7 WSIC, Statesville, Mooresville, North Charlotte.